to AWARE. We are dedicated to communicating information that inspires your positive growth and change. Are you interested in a peaceful planet? Are you interested in optimal health? Are you living with purpose? Are you enjoying your life? We realize each person can make a difference, and our mission is to empower your awareness. The choices that you make in every moment shape your life, and we encourage you to realize that you have your own answers and to always listen to your own truth. We invite you to stay aware. Good afternoon. Welcome to the AWARE Show. Hi, this is Lisa Garr. Good to be with you guys this afternoon. So we've talked a lot about on the AWARE Show about the effects of stress on the body and how long periods of stress, either it's environmental stress or physical stress or emotional stress, that it can eventually lead to a compromised immune system, and that also leads to a lot of different illnesses. Well, here's a new approach. What about your relationships and stress? How much does your relationship cause you stress? And is it possible that men and women could possibly cope differently with stress? I would say yes, most definitely. And so would John Gray, my guest today, who is the author of the best-selling book, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus. He has written a new book called Why Mars and Venus Collide, Improving Relationships by Understanding How Men and Women Cope Differently with Stress. Welcome to the show, John. Thanks for joining me today.
Well, thank you. It's a real pleasure.
It's great to have you. And we lit up the phone lines yesterday because we sparked a whole conversation about sex. So we're going to be talking about sex and stress and all sorts of things with relationships with you today. It's the best person to have on today. So you ready?
Yep.
All right, good. All right, first of all, we have a lot of stress in our lives, of course, just busy lives. It could be work-related. It can be money-related and so forth. How do men and women deal with stress differently?
Well, there's many examples of this. For one, for example, is that when a woman comes home from work, her stress levels go up and a man's stress levels go down.
Isn't that the truth?
So the workplace has now become a major source of stress for women. I'm sorry, the home.
Home.
The home. And,
because,
and ultimately, it does become a source of stress for men, because when their wives aren't happy, the men become fatigued and exhausted.
Well, and why is stress... Why is it that women get home, the stress goes up? I mean, I can tell you, but
okay,
what do you...
go right ahead.
Okay. The house is a mess. It's not left in the same place that I left it because it was messed up by my husband and daughter. Yeah, got to get the kid ready for school the next day and have dinner. And yeah, it's like I hit... Even if I come home from a wonderful vacation, I'll hit the door and stress happens.
Listen, before we even go on vacation, stress hits my wife. She says, well... What about all the mail when we get home? And what about this when we get home?
I know.
I say, people do it.
Why is it that a pair of shoes on the floor will scream out to me and my husband will completely not even see them for weeks?
Because he doesn't see them. That's the difference between men and women.
Why are they the only things I see?
Well, it takes a paragraph to explain it. So,
okay.
But what I think we're all in agreement about is that, you know, that the home has become this big source of stress for women. And if you look historically, the home was not a big source of stress for women. And one way of looking at it is just to say that creating a beautiful home, being a homemaker, is a 12-hour or 15-hour job.
It is. I usually say it's a part-time job to own a house, but
yeah,
could be full-time. You're right.
And so now when women have jobs outside the home for many hours of the day, they come back and they've got 3 or 4 hours to do a 12, 15-hour job.
Oh.
So that would cause anybody to feel enormous stress. And then you'd want to say, well, why is it that women take on that responsibility of the home? And the guy's just sitting there. And part of it, you know, not to be flippant about this, but part of it is that he doesn't see the mess until he's rested. And that is one of the cruxes of the issue here, which is that we all experience stress during our day. But we have different ways of recovering from stress. And the way you recover from stress has to do with different hormones in the body. And the hormone testosterone is what helps men to recover from stress. Testosterone does not, and this is real significant, does not help women recover from stress. It's the hormone oxytocin,
right,
that helps women to recover from stress. It helps to keep stress levels down and helps her to restore a sense of peace and calm and happiness and well-being.
Can you tell me how that works? How does testosterone help men recover from stress?
Well, what we found is that when men's testosterone levels are normal, men's stress levels are low. And when men's stress levels go high, their testosterone levels are low. So we're making the correlation there that this is just an observation in the body, which is very groundbreaking, which is to see the testosterone. Men's bodies make 30 times more testosterone than a woman's in a day if he's healthy. A healthy man will generally have 30 times more testosterone. Testosterone is the hormone that's associated with lowering stress for men. All of men's cardiovascular function, their brain function, is dramatically affected by testosterone levels, and not so in women. The hormone that dramatically affects a woman's well-being and the levels of stress in her body happens to be oxytocin, which is a nurturing hormone. And it's important to understand these two hormones, and then we'll see practically how it applies in our life. But testosterone, to make it simple and very accurate, is stimulated when there's a sense of urgency or when you've finished a task and then you rest. So what they found is that what was known for a long time is that, you know, if you're in an emergency situation, your testosterone levels will go up. Now, what's unique here is that so when men's testosterone levels go up, they cope better with stress. When women's testosterone levels go up and they're in an emergency situation, it doesn't help her to cope with stress. If you look at a woman's cortisol levels under moderate stress levels, it will tend to be twice as high as a man's. This is the kind of stress which we're calling urgency and emergency, which tends to stimulate testosterone.
In women?
In both women
and
men.
In both, okay.
But the key here is that testosterone has all these benefits for men and few for women. And particularly high testosterone is not beneficial, can even interfere with a woman's well-being, because high testosterone is known to interfere with the levels of oxytocin. Oxytocin is the key thing for women to understand. This is when a woman's having lunch with a girlfriend and having a good time, oxytocin's being produced. When my wife's in her garden and she's gardening and there's no urgency or rush and she's sort of in tune with the rhythms of the earth and nature and so forth, doing something she likes to do, not that all women like to do it, but it's something she likes to do, huge amounts of oxytocin are being produced. When you get a massage, if you like a massage, then huge oxytocin levels get produced. If you like cooking, that's a very nurturing activity. Thinking about shopping for people, cooking for people, planning things for people, that's a nurturing activity. Oxytocin levels get produced. So now let's look at the dilemma that women are experiencing today is when they come home, their body's designed to notice the mess, because actually if you had plenty of time, keeping a house orderly and clean is a very oxytocin-producing event. But when you come home to make dinner, to feed your children, to spend time with them, to communicate with them, to beautify your home, all these types of things are oxytocin-producing activities. But when you don't have enough time to do them, when suddenly they become urgent chores, emergencies, alarms are going off, then they stimulate testosterone and it doesn't stimulate oxytocin. So there's sort of this dilemma that women are experiencing. Their genes, their body's makeup, their reward systems all say, do these nurturing type activities first to lower stress. But because there's not enough time, those same activities that could produce oxytocin produce testosterone, and her stress levels don't go down.
So if I can recreate this for you,
it's a little complicated, but it's simple.
No, that's okay. Yeah, now that I'm getting it. So during any stressful activity, testosterone goes up in both men and women. It has a positive effect on men and a negative effect on women.
When it's not balanced with enough oxytocin,
that's the key.
In context. I'm not saying testosterone is bad for women.
Right.
It just doesn't have all the benefits that it has for men.
Oxytocin has all those benefits, but it suppresses the oxytocin in a way. And so now that makes a lot of sense of course it does. If any man that's listening right now cannot figure out how women stress out over messy houses. This is a perfect explanation of that.
Yeah, it's a great explanation for it, and also helps the flip side of the awareness to be the case too, because women just can't understand how he can ignore the mess. Why doesn't he see it? Well, the bigger question is, why does she see it? Because if she had plenty of time to you know, clean the environment, to nurture the environment and so forth, it would be a fun thing for her, a positive thing for her. But because she doesn't have enough time, there's a feeling of overwhelm, a feeling of urgency, and that doesn't stimulate the hormone that her body needs. He might, by the way, he comes in and he'll notice the couch and the remote control right away. If that's not there, he's going to be upset.
Right. Now, I can...
And the reason for that, just to explain that, is that this is how men cope with stress, is they've, throughout the day, they've been producing testosterone and using it up. Then there has to be a cycle. There's like a cycle of taking action, which produces testosterone, and then resting. And resting also restores testosterone level. And while he's resting, it's another part of the cycle where testosterone is used to rebuild muscle mass. But he's literally, as long as he rests and sits on a couch, immediately his cortisol levels will start to drop and testosterone levels will start to increase.
To rebuild. Fascinating.
And if a woman was to come home and sit on a couch, her it doesn't do anything.
It would be awful. Massive anxiety would set in.
That's
now,
right.
I can see that. I totally understand this. I see the phone lines lighting up already. I'm going to say right now that this is not, we're not saying that this is for all men and all women. Yes, I know some men who are extremely neat and extremely tidy, and it's not, you know, that way for all men. Just because you have a male body doesn't necessarily mean this. But, well, I mean, what
no,
do you...
No, let me give you an example.
Okay.
When I look at that, the needy, tidy guy, is I love order, and I love beauty around me, and but I usually don't create it. I found a woman to do it for me.
Because we
not,
love it.
And I miss it if it's not there. But for me, what's most important is that I have my chance to recover, and then that other need for tidiness comes forward. And that's what I want to make the point here, which is very universal, and which is that the way men recover from stress is through recreation. And the way women recover from stress tends to be nurturing-type activities towards their environment, towards others, and themselves. And that's a whole discussion, which it needs to be done, which is to see all the different ways that women cope best with stress, the things they do. And to discuss that gives permission for other women to do that who are not doing so well in coping with stress.
So, I mean, what you just said, spending some time with yourself. Now, when or on yourself, that's the last thing that especially working moms do. We come last. Absolutely. Work. I mean, the mom.
That's exactly it. And this is one of the symptoms. Again, we're talking about symptoms of stress on women, is that women have what I call in my book a never-ending to-do list.
Yep.
And you have to realize that men don't. Men have a to-do list, and then we put it away. And we have the capacity to put it away. We kind of leave it at the office. It's not like it doesn't exist, but we have the ability to just tune it out, to forget it, and literally go, and this is literal, we go to another part of our brain, and the part of the brain that has the to-do list just goes to sleep and regenerates itself. Women's brains are way more active than men's, and they have this to-do list that's on all the time, the never-ending to-do list. And when women are under stress, when they're not coping well with stress, we'll put it that way, they will always tend to put their own needs at the end of that list as opposed to at the front of the list. And it's very important. It's not that she needs to always be at the front of the list, but for women to cope with stress, just as men have to fulfill this balanced cycle of taking action and then resting, taking action and resting, women need to have a cycle of nurturing others and being nurtured. And in an environment where nobody's nurturing you, then you have to step up and nurture yourself, which means sometimes put yourself at the front of that list.
But that's impossible because we can't rest until everything is done.
That's the feeling. Okay, now I guess that's the feeling. But women are quite capable of solving the problem when they understand that that is a symptom of being tossed off balance. It's when you're not coping well with stress that you feel as though everybody's needs are more important than your own. But what she has to recognize is that's being tipped off balance, and that would help her cope with stress better if she also began putting herself up towards the front of the list as well.
And I do know some women like that too. So some amazing yoga masters and who do that for. But I happen to
my
be.
My wife's
one of,
very good at that, I'll tell you. And I know it can be done. And she has a very overwhelming life, but she has also got. And I don't say this is, you know, we're talking to women who are in relationships and women who are not in relationships with a man. They're single, they're living alone or whatever. And so there's two solutions here. But when you're in a relationship with a man, it can make it way, way easier. Or without this knowledge, it can make it way, way more difficult to nurture yourself because you've got this person you're living with. And so you constantly feel like you want to nurture them. And then you expect them to nurture back, and then you feel disappointed, and then you feel resentful, and then your stress levels go even higher. And my message to women is if you really understand men, you'll realize the greatest gift you can give to a man, and that's what women want to do. I mean, when they're nurturing, they want to nurture his need. Well, what is his need? The greatest gift you can ever give to the man you love is to make yourself happy so that he can have the opportunity to make you even happier.
I have heard this. Very, very true. From Gino's nodding as well, my producer. Yeah, that we got a bunch of bobbing heads around here, a bunch of women in the studio. There's, I absolutely have heard that the man is happy when a woman is happy. What did my husband say? He goes, happy wife, happy life.
That's exactly it. That's exactly it.
He said that to me once.
But let me speak for all the women listening now who are saying, well, that's not my husband because he doesn't do the things that
he
make me
care.
Happy.
Right.
And,
right.
And that's it's a faulty conclusion. It's still true that if she was happy, he would like to make her happier. If she's unhappy, then he feels like nothing I can do will make her happy. And that's often because the things he does are not the things that will make her happy. But also it's true on the other side of the fence, which is the way she interacts with him usually pushes him away rather than invites him into her world to make her happier. And one of the most important things that we just talked about, to invite a man into your world so he can then make you happier, is to first do things for yourself to make yourself happier. It's like, you know, it's a little bit of a funny example here, but it's popping in my head. But there's an old saying is that, you know, people get on a train which is moving. And you know, kind of wait to the last minute. Once the train's moving, then they jump on the train. Well, when a woman already starts making herself happier, men want to just jump on that train and make her happier and get credit for all that glory.
Okay, so then what about the to-do gene? I mean, that gene that we have in our DNA.
That to-do list.
What?
Okay, there's nothing wrong with that to-do gene. That is part of being a woman, and it doesn't create any anxiety or problems. If you're getting the nurturing, if you're getting plenty of oxytocin, then that feeling that there's a never-ending list of things to do is not a problem if you feel as a woman that you have plenty of time to do it and you have plenty of support to do it. That's the problem for women, is not their to-do gene. It's the feeling that they don't have the support, which may be based in reality or not. They don't have the support. Or they don't have the time, which, again, may be based in reality or not. But it's that feeling.
Well, by the way, my guest is John Gray, and we are talking about his new book, Why Mars and Venus Collide. But my husband said to me the other day, he said, I could never clean the kitchen to your satisfaction. You will always find something else that needs fixing. And I said, yeah, because once you clean it, then I'll say, oh, great, let me help you and move this over here. Wouldn't that make it better? It's a great stalemate there because...
Well, every man can relate to what your husband just said.
Yes,
and
exactly.
Probably every woman can relate to what you
just
said.
Right.
And as a counselor, the way I help with that particular dilemma is to point out to women that if you want your man's help, then you want to be practical. And to be practical is whenever he helps, make sure he gets the message that he did a good job. And the why is that so? Is that men are different, and that what runs a man, what gives him fuel, which motivates him, there's actually a motivation hormone and so forth, and it's all linked in with testosterone.
Okay.
When you acknowledge that a man did it good enough, his testosterone levels go up, and next time he wants to do it again.
Really?
If I clean up the kitchen and my wife says, why didn't you put the glasses over here? I'm waiting for my big reward like, gee, John cleaned up the kitchen. How nice. My life is a little easier. I'm a little happier now that I have that support. Instead of getting a message like that, the message he gets is what he did was not enough. Now, I want to defend women for a moment here, is that it's just women don't understand men and how to love men, which is why they wouldn't naturally do that. If a woman understood how important it was to men, she'd happily do that. But when women work together and a woman does a job, another woman feels like a way I can show my caring and concern is to join in and help.
Right.
And that's what women do, because when you join together to do something, the hormone oxytocin gets produced. And oxytocin has the big payoff for women. But oxytocin is not something that's a big payoff for men. Men like it. It's the bonding hormone. It's the closeness hormone. There's the intimacy hormone.
Men have it?
Men have it just as much as women. The difference is that men don't run out of it. When women are under stress, women use up their oxytocin very quickly, whereas men don't use it up. So men pretty much have a stable supply of oxytocin. See, I can come home and completely ignore my wife and feel that I'm very close with her.
Right.
And most men can. As long as she's happy. If she's happy and doesn't even say, how's your day or anything, she's just busy doing what she's doing, but she's happy to see me, then I will feel very close to her. And that's because I have plenty of oxytocin. Women, though, when their men go off to their caves and whatever, she's feeling like, why does he want to spend time with me? Why does he want to interact with me? What is TV more important than me? What's going on here? And all of those feelings are kind of a surface question based upon an inner frustration, which is she's not getting the kind of nurturing support when she comes home, or she's not anticipating getting that nurturing support when she gets home that would stimulate this good feeling. In her brain, she's not thinking, gee, I'm not getting my oxytocin, but the body is.
Right.
The body is saying, gee, you know, if we were interacting together, I'd be feeling this oxytocin. So women will do all kinds of things which they think are really wonderful and loving, and it's annoying to men. You know, she can come and ask me lots of questions about my day. And, you know, men will say, good, fine, all right. And then women kind of look, have this look like, is that all I get?
Yeah. I mean, we are talkers, definitely. But now how...
Well, not just talkers, because not all women are talkers. Lots are. But they have different needs. And if a man doesn't understand a woman's different needs, he'll think she's needy or demanding when she's not. He just doesn't know how to interpret her correctly. And vice versa, when men have needs... You know, when I start talking about men needing the acknowledgement that he did a good job, I already know. There's lots of women go, what, I have to treat him like a baby? And I go, no, that's how you treat a man. If the president came into your house and you voted for that president, and he came in and helped out in your kitchen a little bit, you go, oh, thank you so much, that's so wonderful. You don't think that's treating him like a baby. It's giving what's due. And if we took the idea that if someone's needs are different, we look down on them, it would look like this. I tell men, like one of the things that produces oxytocin is whenever you see your partner, basically you come home, find her, give her a hug, ask her about her day. You know, that stimulates oxytocin. When you're on a romantic date, hold her hand occasionally, put your arm around her. Now, a man could easily say, well, what do I need to do that for? You know, she can cross the street without my holding her hand. That's for children. What does she need a hug for? You hug kids. What do I need to hug her for? We're having sex. You know, so, I mean... A man can have these all kinds of bizarre reactions, and I'm putting that in the context is that's the same bizarreness of a woman thinking a man's like a child if he has different needs from her. And the needs that stimulate testosterone, you see, there's a need for acknowledgement and appreciation and acceptance of how you are. When you give those kinds of messages, you stimulate testosterone. And certainly women like to be appreciated and acknowledged and accepted. Well, the difference between men and women is that men need it about 10 times more. Men need hugs and affection, whatever, but basically women need it about 10 times more if you look at the hormones which are produced by those types of activities.
Men need 10 times more the affection than women?
No, women need 10 times more.
Okay, good.
Everything, so, and everything you hear as a counselor is the woman saying, he doesn't look at me, he doesn't listen
right.
to me, he doesn't plan dates anymore, he's not affectionate,
so
he
women...
only touches me when he wants sex, all this stuff. Right. And men are going, what's wrong with that?
So women need 10 times more of almost everything than men do. So what you're saying is upon walking in a door when the man and the woman, now we haven't even added kids into this whole equation, but when you see each other after a work day or after being apart for some period of time, give some time and attention to each other's needs for maybe 5 minutes to the men and 10 minutes to the women, and you're going to be good to go?
Well, that's certainly one good formula. I wouldn't set down a formula for everybody.
I'm saying, comparatively.
But comparatively, the way it looks is you kind of have a greater understanding of where your partner is coming from. So some days I come home and I'm just tired, and I just go sit on the couch and watch some news. My wife doesn't take it personally. She thinks he must have worked hard. He's tired. I know it. She doesn't take it personally, meaning she doesn't feel like it's a sign I don't care about her. She sees it as a sign he needs time for what his needs are. And there's other days when I come home, I find her first. Where are you, honey? I'll look for her. Or she's not home yet from her job. I'll wait for her. Or when she comes home, I'll get up from where I'm going. I put my news on TiVo pause. Whenever she comes into the room and I haven't seen her for a while, I put the TiVo on pause, and I get up, go over and find her, give her a hug, ask her about something that happened during her day to show that I know what goes on in her life, give her a chance to talk a little bit about it. Sometimes, if she was out shopping, she doesn't even bother now. She leaves all her bags in the car because she knows I'll immediately say, oh, I'll carry them in. So just those little gestures, the connecting moments, sometimes are the most important things in a relationship, and not that
that's
it's everything.
True. All right.
It's a big deal.
It is absolutely a big deal. And that now we're going to open up the phones for calls. The number here is 818-985-5735. John Gray is my guest. And if you have relationship questions, I know lots of people are already calling in. So, but first of all, let me ask you, if a relationship has already gone beyond, I mean, you seem to have a good relationship and a good communication level with your wife, but what happens for people or couples who are so far beyond that, that it's gotten sour and bad and they're just existing under the same roof together? Where do you start?
Well, what's interesting is that I have a novel approach, which has actually made my books famous around the world. But it was long before my books were successful. I had a sold-out counseling practice with a long waiting list and a lot of clients moving through, because I was very effective in helping couples in the kind of situation you're talking about. My message is the message for people who are not having problems but want a better relationship. But what's amazing is it's the same message as you bring it to people who have serious problems, lots of resentment, lots of hurt, lots of history, mm-hmm. wanting a divorce, wanting to give up. And you give me those people for an hour, and I teach them the same things that I basically teach people as the basics of a good relationship. And they go, wow, we haven't been doing any of that stuff. And then we just let them try doing that stuff. And in a few weeks, they're feeling so successful, they can let the past be the past, because they realize very concretely in their own experience, they didn't know what they were doing. They did not know what they were doing. And we can really get it that our partners didn't have a clue, and now they do have a clue. Then you have hope, and when you have hope, you have inspiration, and if there's love in your heart, then it has a chance to flow. And for so many couples, not all, but for so many couples, they are well-suited for themselves. They've just gotten stuck in quicksand, and they don't know how to get out, and this becomes a rope to pull them out. And once they're out, they learn how to not fall back into it. So that's a...
Well, and how do you answer the situation? Because a lot of people were calling me yesterday about... couples just aren't having sex. Long-term marriages, the sex is absolutely gone. And as you explained about the testosterone levels and the oxytocin levels being different, this could create that miscommunication as well. What do you say to a couple who it's been a long time since they've had physical relationship? Where do you go?
I think if you go 3 weeks without sex, you've got problems and you better deal with it. You've got a toilet that's leaking or something in your house, you better fix it. It's going to run up big bills.
How do you deal with it?
You've got a crack in your foundation or your house. You got to deal with it. It's a problem that needs to be solved.
In what way, though?
Well,
it's all different, I understand.
Well, no, it's actually my problems. This is simple stuff. When people understand it, they get backed up into that place. But there are a variety of different issues with it. One can just simply be what happens is we get our feelings hurt when our partners step on our toes and they do things, and we don't know how to remedy the situation. We might say, well, I don't want you to do that again. Our partner says, well, I didn't do anything. And with this knowledge of how men and women are different and how we have different vulnerabilities and we have different sensitivities, then we're able to show a little regret when we hurt our partner's feelings, as opposed to thinking, well, I didn't do anything. My friends would have no problem with that. Why do you have a problem with that? So the first thing is we need to experience a little remorse and apologize for our mistakes. And most people who are in that situation don't know what their mistakes are. They think all the mistakes are their partner's mistakes. So first thing I do is when people are pointing the finger at their partner, I show them that always three fingers are pointing back at them. And when they can see that, they're much more willing to forgive their partners and take some responsibility to make up with their partner and to give more but of the things that would actually make the relationship work. That would then increase her oxytocin levels. That's the whole key to bringing sex back, is we don't worry about the man, we worry about the woman, and we get her oxytocin levels up. And because once they get up to a certain level where she feels a certain amount of support, her body will start emitting pheromones, and pheromones will activate a man's sexuality, and suddenly he gets really turned on to her and wants to have sex with her. That's sort of the basic dynamic of learning to make up, is to get the woman feeling loved and supported again, get the man to do whatever it takes, which is not always so hard once he reasons it. Because men just want to solve the problem. If I tell the man, look, if you do this and this and this and she feels this way, then things are going to be on a good balance again.
No, I'm liking this. I'm pretty much liking this. From a female perspective, I love what you're saying. I'd love to hear from our men, too. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to take your calls. The number here is 818-985-5735. My guest is John Gray. We're talking about his new book, Why Mars and Venus Collide, Improving Relationships by Understanding How Men and Women Cope Differently with Stress. We will take your calls when we come back. This is Lisa Garr. You're listening to The Aware Show.
Yep, it's the summertime, and it's time to think about getting that old vehicle out of your driveway. Did you know that you can support KPFK by donating an old car or truck? It's easy. You just call us at 877-573-5288 and speak to a KPFK vehicle donation representative. We'll take care of all of the details. You can also donate online at kpfk.org. Again, you can donate your car to support KPFK. Call us at 877-573-5288. And thank you for continuing to support the truly progressive voice in Southern California radio, KPFK 90.7 FM.
Welcome back to The Aware Show. Hi, this is Lisa Garr. My guest is John Gray. He's a leading expert on relationships. He's the author of the best-selling book, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus. He has a new book out called Why Mars and Venus Collide, Improving Relationships by Understanding How Men and Women Cope Differently with Stress. And he has ideas and solutions and all sorts of things about how to make a partnership a haven in today's harried world. We're taking your calls, 818-985-5735. Let's go right to the phones. James in Santa Monica. Hey, James, do you have a question for John Gray?
I almost have more of a comment.
Okay.
I started reading Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, and it sounded like the first half of the book seemed to be a total slam against men and how men are always screwing up. And what I heard today sounds much more usable to me. And my question for Mr. Gray is, sometimes when I take my wife out to dinner and a movie, it's almost like the intimacy does not happen after that, and I don't know why. So I'm going to read your new book, but can you explain how this thing may happen?
Well, let me ask you, is it something that happens on the date that shuts you down or shuts her down?
Well, if we go out for dinner and I'm giving her all of my attention, how is it that that doesn't come back to me as intimacy when we go to bed together?
You mean as sex,
yes.
Intimate sex. You're being polite, but you're talking about sex, right?
Yes.
Okay, I have to ask a few questions. It's not... I think I know where you're going with this, but so when you come home, what kind of communication do you have about sex?
You know, now that you mention it, maybe I'm assuming too much that it should all just happen automatically and that she should know how much I love her and need her without having to say it.
Yeah, and you know, I'll tell you what my wife says to me. She actually said a few days ago, because I was wanting to have sex in the morning, I told her, let's have sex tomorrow morning, and she said, good. And then she got up much earlier than me, was out in the garden, and I assumed that I guess she didn't want to have sex. And I told her, she said later, she said, what about sex? And I said, well, I assumed you didn't want to have it. And she says, there you go again with all your assumptions.
With our assumptions. Now that strikes so close to home with our assumptions. I think you've really said it. And can you tell me why I got the feeling that your first book seemed to be almost anti-men?
All right, let me cover that in a minute. I want to just stick with the sex thing a little bit more. This is a really nice technique that works about communicating around sex. One of the things you can do, I mean, some people have a gift for talking about sex and some people don't, and it's a big project to overcome.
It seems to be, yeah.
Yeah, and so rather than, you know, try to tell people how they should talk about sex, because it doesn't just work telling people, it's a knack. Some people are just more comfortable at it, some people are not, sometimes their partner isn't. Sometimes they've had history where it just doesn't go the right direction. When you get a rejection, it hurts too much. You don't want to do it again. So anyway, yeah. There's a way to circumvent that by establishing a little guideline, which is the candle tool. And this is, I didn't invent this. It's been around a long time, but I like it a lot. And it's when you're in the mood, you have these two candles. And one of them, when you're in the mood, you light one candle. That's your candle. And there's no demand. It doesn't mean we have to have sex, because who wants to have sex with your partner if they're not interested in it?
But well, you have to.
Right. So you let your partner know that you're in the mood. Then they see the candles lit, and so then they go and light their side of the candle. And now you know you can just move into sex with all confidence, and it's going to happen. And it's a really nice feeling, kind of like in the beginning of the marriage where you know it's, you know, your partner's equally interested in sex and it's all happening and a lot of things haven't gotten in the way of it. So that's one aspect of it, and it's really good. Many times my wife would light the candle and I didn't even think she was in the mood at all. So that was really wonderful. And
what a wonderful surprise.
Yeah, great surprise. It's kind of like knowing the weather report when you're going on a vacation.
Exactly.
Wow.
Like you don't have to make the assumptions. You don't have to wonder. You just have to enjoy it, maybe.
That's exactly it. You don't face this sense of rejection of saying to your partner, you want to have sex tonight, and them saying, oh, I'm tired, or I'd rather not tonight, or something. You know, just, or even sometimes what women will say, and this is a good thing to be aware of, if you do use words for those out there listening, and you say, oh, you want to have sex tonight, and your wife says, I don't know, it doesn't necessarily mean no.
Oh, well.
That's the great thing, is you can
But you see, speaking as a man, I would say that means no.
Right.
That's right. That's the point I'm making, is whenever a woman says, I don't know, we as men know that means no, because if you ask a man, do you want to have sex tonight, and he says, I don't know, he means no, but he doesn't want to hurt your feelings.
That's right.
Wow. Thanks so much for your call, James. I absolutely appreciate that.
Thank you.
All right.
Thanks for your call. I appreciate it a lot. And I'll just go ahead and just answer that last little part. Just,
yeah.
You know, the Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus book was written in 1992. And so at that time, talking about differences was extremely politically incorrect. And I would have to say it was appropriate at the time, but there's many, many things in that book where, in a sense, I was much, we might say, easier on women than men.
Okay.
Because it was so politically incorrect, and women needed a lot of extra support. So maybe the book might seem that way, and that's his. But the new book, which is so exciting, I kind of rewrote Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus after 15 years as this new book, which is based upon all the hormones.
Yeah.
And that makes it much easier for me to talk about the differences.
It really does, because it's based in science, and I really do enjoy that and that part about it. And, you know, it's amazing that your other book lasted, I mean, for 15 years. It really stayed on the best-selling list for a long time because it opened up the communication between men and women. Isn't it funny that somebody will call a radio show and talk about this intimate sexual relationship with their wife, but then the last person they're going to talk to about it is the wife? You know, it really does open up this conversation that gets suppressed, and then all sorts of energy gets piled on top of it, and you never talk about it, and it's that unspoken thing. I want to go back to the phones, but someone called in with an interesting question about the candle technique, which I think is lovely. That's a really great, great technique. What do you do about the family bed when you have your children sleeping with you? How do you use the candle technique? Run around the house with candles? Chase each other?
Well, you never let your kids know what the candles mean.
Well, what do you think about the family bed, by the way?
Well, I raised my children with a family bed, so
okay.
I'm pro-family bed, although my children are not having family beds.
That's funny. How did
I think it is very funny. And so
that is funny. How did you have sex with your wife with the kids in the bed?
Oh, well, we had also another room where we had a bed. We'd have sex. We'd schedule sex, you know, when the children were taking naps or when we had babysitters or something like that.
Okay.
But we certainly didn't have sex while the child was in bed. I felt that was totally inappropriate.
No, yeah, of course. Yeah. So that's a good thing. Scheduled sex is okay. That's
oh,
all right.
You have to. If you're going to have children, you have to schedule sex. I mean, and you know, it's just everything in life is to go on a walk with my wife. We have to schedule that.
Right.
You know, so why not scheduling sex? You know, and what time are we going to have dinner tonight? Our lives have become so bumpy in terms of our schedules and the needs around us that we have to loosen up around scheduling around sex. And just for the men listening, it's just a simple phrase, which is, you know, oh, let's have sex tonight, or how about having sex tomorrow? And just one simple phrase. And then the way it works in my household, for example, is that we have an understanding that I never get rejected sexually straight off, meaning if I say, let's have sex tonight or let's have sex tomorrow morning, give her a little time, or let's go have sex now even, she can always say no. But the way she says no is very nice. She'll say always something positive, like, oh, what a good idea. Let's do it tomorrow.
Oh, so she's got a frame around it, and so do you.
That's right. You just put this nice context around it so nobody ever ends up feeling rejected, and she never feels that I'm demanding something from her. And so that's our basic understanding. And so we're free to say, you know, let's have sex. And a lot of women like it when the man does it. And although as a guy, I'd like my wife to, you know, if I sort of could write the world my way, I'd like her to do it more often. But she likes when I do it more often. And I think just to defend the women here who feel that way, our society is so much sort of focused on women, young women being beautiful and sexy and older women not being beautiful and sexy, you know, because they're all the young women are beautiful and sexy in the magazines, and that's what everybody's looking at.
Right.
And what a man doesn't know is that when you initiate sex, you're giving a wonderful message to her, which is that you find her to be beautiful and sexy. And so it's just another way to tell her you look beautiful and sexy is, and not to say you can't say that as well, honey, you look beautiful and sexy, let's have sex tonight. That's a really nice message to give to her, just as when a man initiates sex, if she says, oh, what a good idea, ooh, I'd like to do that. Even if you don't want to do it right away, you don't want to answer it when he says, hey, let's have sex, and have you say something like, sex? I can't have sex. I've got to do the kids. I've got to do the dishes. I've got to get this done and this done.
So you have an understanding, right? You know, in our household, my husband and I are on totally different schedules body clock-wise. He gets up at 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning and goes to bed at 9:30 at night. I'm one of those 8:30 in the morning risers, and I love staying up late because it's quiet, and then I get to do the household nurturing, and the oxytocin gets up, and then I can finally rest. But we have these different schedules in terms of our bodies, and that's, you know, for us, it's challenging because there's not a lot of time. We're actually in bed at the same exact time unless we're both completely
Again, another reason to schedule sex, you know,
right,
to create that schedule time.
Okay, let's go to back to the phones. Ron Dorsey in Chicago is joining us. Do you have a question for John Gray? Whoops. Let me see here.
You know, while we're talking about sex, another nice thing is the whole concept of quickies. You know, sometimes women don't know they're in the mood, and they can get in the mood. And sometimes women aren't so much in the mood, but they like to be close with their partners, and a quickie's fine. And so sometimes you could say to your partner, you want to have sex tonight or tomorrow morning, and let's say you're sleeping or you want to sleep late and he wants to get up early. And he says, oh, let's have sex in the morning. He said, oh, but I want to sleep in. But if you want a quickie, we could do that before you run off to work. That will make your man very, very happy. And the only quickie. Danger of doing quickies is, and I know this from many years of sexual counseling, is once you start doing quickies, women start to feel like, well, then that's all he ever wants is quickies, as opposed to, you know, making love where you're spending more time and there's more affection and there's not, you know, this 5 or 10 minute experience.
I see. So you've seen that happen. We actually did get Ron Dorsey on the phone from Chicago. Hi, Ron. Do you have a question for John Gray?
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Hi, Lisa. How are you?
Hi, great.
I haven't seen you since the Chris Howard seminar at LAX. But anyway, I just want to agree with your guest. And I would also throw in there that all of your concepts are very right on, and they also apply to single guys.
Oh, do tell.
Well, no, they do. I mean, he's right. He just is.
Okay,
and,
I see.
And, you know, I've never been married, and I have no children. Okay.
Nor do you want any.
Well, my brother's a pediatrician, right? And I don't have any problem with children. I have a niece and a nephew, and watch them grow up, born, everything. They're both, she's in grad school and he's in DePaul in economics. So, you know, that's cool. Me personally, it just would jam my career.
Did you actually have a question for John Gray?
Well, yes, I do. My specific question is this. Have you or have you not ever heard of a website called francoseduction.com? That's FRANCO.
Have you heard of that?
No, haven't heard of it.
Take a look at it.
Well, oh, okay. Well, that's a good question. Thank you very much for your comment. It leads me into something else about yesterday we were talking about porn. And
oh, well, I just agree, and since he obviously knows exactly what he's talking about, I felt that he should know about that. And it's not a porno site or anything weird. It's done by this guy. He's like a psychologist or something like that, into women's sites.
No. I appreciate
that.
Well, while
we're promoting that site, let's also promote my site, too, marszenas.com.
Okay, and thank you very much for your call. Actually, it spurred on a conversation, so we're going to go ahead and let that caller go. But I wonder why the phones aren't doing that. That's weird. The phones are a little freaky right now. But the conversation yesterday that started up was about a woman called in. Her husband was surfing porn, and the guest that I had on said, well, he essentially said, go take a polka dancing class and go jump on your husband. Now, it was a little bit harsh, harshly received by some of the listeners. But what he was saying was, basically, look at what's going on in you and see why you have a problem with having sex and see if you're the cause of this particular problem. What do you say to women who are – and then I got a bunch of calls of a bunch of people who said, oh, my partner is doing the porn websites as well. What if the husband or the wife or the partner or whatever type of relationship you're in has a relationship with pornography instead of with you?
Okay, so it's a little hard for women to understand. It's easier for men to understand. And there's this hormone called testosterone. And when a guy looks at a porno site, enormous amounts of testosterone and dopamine get produced. These dopamine is the pleasure hormone in the brain, and testosterone is the hormone that makes him one of the things it does, it makes him interested in having sex. And it's literally like a recreational drug, and that's how it should be looked at. Beer is a recreational drug as well. Marijuana is a recreational drug. Then you've got prescribed drugs like antidepressants, Prozac, Zoloft. You know, you really need to put it in the category with all these other things, first of all, as it is a way he's medicating some need, or a way he is, you know, sort of lost in the world of addiction. It's the same category you put into these kids today. 95% of the kids who play video games are males. Because once again, video games are designed to stimulate dopamine, which is the addictive pleasure hormone in the brain, and testosterone. So, first of all, let's just look at it as not like, okay, that's bad. Let's look at it as that could become a bad habit, or it could be some curiosity. And it's better to look at it as curiosity, just like if somebody drinks, you don't say everybody who drinks is an alcoholic because they're not addicted to it, but they do it for a little entertainment here and there and so forth. So in that context, I'm not coming from a puritanical, judgmental thing that, you know, to see a woman's body is bad. It's a beautiful thing.
But
it's how if it's done tastefully or it's not done tastefully or if it becomes addictive.
So
and this is the conversation I have in a therapy session with a couple when this is the case. What I'll say is basically, here's where looking at porn becomes a problem. It becomes a problem when I'm making love with my wife, and what will happen is the images that I saw when I was looking at porn, if I was looking at porn, they would cross my mind, and I would just easily come back to my wife. And then it's not a problem. It's just like day pictures from the day might cross your mind while you're making love as you're coming back to the pleasure of being with your wife. Where porn becomes a problem is where I depend upon remembering the porn that I saw in order to be turned on to my partner. So in a sense, I'm not making love to her, but I'm making love to this fantasy person out there. That is going to be hurtful to the relationship and eventually cause her to be less interested in him sexually and cause her to be less interested in him in terms of the relationship or less fulfilled with him, and that will cause him to be less interested in her as well. So that's where porn becomes a problem. Then that gives a man, even if he is addicted and doesn't want to admit it, which many men don't with any addiction or any woman with an addiction. Usually when people have addictions, quite commonly they deny that they have an addiction. But at least it gives him a context to begin understanding that he has a problem or if he has a problem, and for him to begin realizing the truth of why it's a problem. Instead of just saying that's bad, you create a context of why that may not work for you or your partner, because how she's supposed to feel loved and adored if he's thinking about some other woman while he's supposedly loving and adoring her.
Right, that would make her think, what's wrong with me?
Right. That's right, okay. Exactly. And it doesn't really convey love to her, you know. It'd be like a wife saying to her husband, you know, oh my gosh, this movie star is so wonderful, and he's so great. And,
right.
And, gee, you know, those muscles are nice, but wow, did you see, you know, Arnold's?
Uh-huh.
You don't compare your partner to other people. You might mentally do it occasionally, but you don't dwell on that. And if you do, it's hurtful to your partner. It's hurtful to your relationship.
Okay. But
that becomes a way of dealing with it. See, it doesn't work. You know, the Dr. Phil approach where you just tell people you're bad and you're no good and you better change, and they go, okay, I'm bad, I'm no good, I'll change. That doesn't create lasting change. What creates lasting change is when you first try to understand and accept where someone's coming from, why they're doing what they're doing, and helping them realize another way, why what they're doing doesn't work, so they can reasonably see why this wouldn't work. Because ultimately, he wants to make his wife happy. He doesn't realize that that could become an impediment. Now, then there's the flip side of it, which is if you notice your husband's, you know, looking at more porn or whatever, then you ought to, you know, light your candle more often so he knows that he's being welcomed into the relationship. But I would never put this on a woman and say it's her fault, just like you can't say, you know, an alcoholic man, it's his wife who caused him to be alcoholic. Although I'll tell you, I've met many men who said my wife led me to drink, but, you know, I still would not blame the wife for it. If you want to assign blame, whatever our problems are, we are always responsible for our own problems.
Okay. Well, that makes a lot of sense, and there's actually a caller that's calling about it, and I want to get the line on the phone, the line 8 in, if we can. Sorry, I'm having some phone issues over here. But hi, Mario, are you available?
Yes, I'm available.
Hello.
Hi. Hello.
What was your question about that?
Dr. Gray, my question was about split attention. I had a couple questions, though. I wanted to know if it's true your book is like the bestseller, like internationally. And like, how, you know,
wait,
I,
your question,
I tell everybody about it.
It is a bestseller, definitely. But
it's the biggest selling book in the world
in the
1990s.
Right?
In the last decade, it was the biggest selling book in the world, not just relationship book, but of every kind of book, fiction, nonfiction, science, everything.
That's great.
Okay,
to know.
Great.
It was amazing. I mean, it's done really well, and it continues to be a bestseller around the world. So it is very popular.
And what was your question about split attention?
My quick question is about split attention. Like, for myself, I'm divorced and single, and getting into a new relationship, I find that my partners are, or my potential partner, are very concerned about split attention, and I am sort of on, I'm not sure where to.
Well, what
to
do
go
you mean
to,
by
like,
split attention in this way? Are you talking about two different women you want to be with?
No, well, just looking or having different women on my mind, yeah.
Okay, so clearly you don't want to go on a date with a woman and say, well, you know, I like you, but I'm also thinking about this other woman. That's just inappropriate conversation. So you don't share everything that goes on in your mind with somebody when you're just getting to know them. The second thing is, I just want to give you a little more support at my website, MarsVenus.com. We handle a lot of single issues. Every week I've got different, little essays that I've written on dating and so forth. It's a big, big topic at our website, and I've got a book on that called Mars Venus on a Date. That's just as a resource. But the basic idea here is that it's perfectly natural. There's stages of dating. There's a process of bonding. And the first part of that process of finding a mate to bond with is the stage one, which is stage one is attraction. And in stage one attraction, it's natural, particularly for men, to be attracted to many women. So don't feel like something's wrong if you're with one woman and you find yourself being attracted to other women. But
so I'm thinking about meditating and doing things to get very clear about that.
Or just not saying anything about it.
No, you just don't say anything about it. And you don't stare at other women when you're on your date with the woman A. You don't stare at woman B. It's just polite behavior.
Dating etiquette.
Dating needs to go through stages. Just because you're on a date with somebody doesn't mean you're in a monogamous, committed relationship to them. Just as when you ask a woman out on a date and she goes, well, why? And you say, oh, I just want to get to know you. I don't want to, marry you or anything. We're not talking serious relationship, but it'd be nice to get to know you. I'm very interested in you. That takes all the pressure off of it, and there should be pressure off of it. You know, stage one dating, it's good to date around, date many people. And my best advice to single people looking for lasting love is stop looking for the perfect person. It puts too much pressure on yourself and that other person. But instead, look to create a series of positive dating experiences. So you look forward to it instead of dreading it. So you have a positive experience, so you feel light about it. Then gradually, a level of certainty will start to increase with one partner. And then you start moving into a committed relationship. And in that process, there's actually other stages, but that's the short answer.
That's a good, yeah. And we're just about to end the show. We have 30 seconds. But sex on a first date, yes or no?
What was that again?
Sex on a first date? I know, this is a...
Asking a guy, always.
Perfect answer.
But the answer for a woman is if you want to, if it feels right to you, if it feels good, yes. But if you're doing it just to please him, no. You'll never see him again.
Good answer. Very good answer. All right. Well, thank you so much, John Gray. Always just so much information. and we had an hour, too, and I feel like we didn't even scratch the surface. But thanks a lot.
We zoomed right by the Awareness Show. What a great show. Thank you.
Thank you very much. John Gray was my guest. Why Mars and Venus Collide is his new book, talking about how men and women deal with stress differently and on a hormonal level, which is very, very good conversation. That's it for me today. Thank you, Gina Salvati and Tanya Jenkins and extraordinary engineers here at KPFK. Tamika, thank you. And while I'm committed to bringing you the clearest information possible in the end, I always encourage you to listen to your own truth. Until next time, I invite you to stay aware.